This is KGMI Connects with Joe Tien, a live local show about our community and you on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
And thanks for joining us here on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Great to have you here with our Open Lines, Open Idea, Open Opinion program on KGMI. 360-676-5464 is our phone number as always. And we'll be looking forward to your calls, comments, questions, ideas, opinions. We start out, though, with our 40th District State Representative Alex Rammel. And lots has been going on down in Olympia. And kind of an eye-opener was in our newscast there. The mandate that new cars sold in Washington as of the 2030 model will be required to be electric. And lots of other issues as well. And Alex, great to have you here on the show.
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for the invitation. I'm glad it worked out time to time to get together.
Yeah, I know this is a busy time for you folks down there in Olympia, getting ready to wrap things up. When does the session officially end?
If we want to get anything done this year, we've got to do it by this Sunday.
Okay, yeah, I thought we were kind of right at the sprint to the finish. But a big story that's grabbing a lot of headlines today is this bill that would phase out, basically set a deadline for the sale of all electric vehicles here in Washington, at least. As I understand it, light vehicles, light cars, light trucks, that sort of thing. Is that right?
It's the short version is close, but it's a bit different than that.
Uh-huh.
It is goal for light duty vehicles, cars and trucks, and new ones sold in Washington to be zero emission electric by 2030. That's a goal. It's not a requirement. It's not a mandate. So the idea of the bill really is about how do we plan for those cars? Because there are auto manufacturers right now who are not planning to make internal combustion engines 10 years from now. GM, the day we had a committee hearing on this bill, GM announced that they were going to stop making internal combustion engines by 2035. So setting a goal for the state isn't the most important part. The important part is that we have enough charging stations and enough clean electricity to be able to meet the demand that's coming. And so that's really what this bill is about. It's about planning ahead for that clean transportation future.
And that makes sense. What I've heard from people is that just from a practical standpoint, the infrastructure, the power generation is one thing. Getting that power to neighborhoods, to homes where electric vehicles would be charged is a whole other thing. And whether the infrastructure that's in place now, say, even in fairly new subdivisions and fairly new developments, maybe isn't up to par to carry that load that would be required to charge a good number of electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm. So in any one building, it's not too challenging. It's about it's a 220 plug. It's the same thing that you would have to plug your dryer into or to plug an electric hot water heater into. And you just need one of those in the garage. And that's what we're asking for in the bill in terms of new construction. But then you're right, making sure that the electric utilities have the electricity coming online in time for that new load growth, that's going to be at least as important. And because it happens at different times of day than maybe they're used to, right? You don't run your air conditioner at the same time that you would charge your car. You don't run it at the same time you might use it for hot water heater. And so they have to start planning for different times of day, different locations. Uber and Lyft, for example, are likely to be early adopters on electric vehicles, and they're going to drive more miles than most other cars. And so places where Uber and Lyft go a lot, airports and ferry terminals, those kinds of places are likely to need more charging infrastructure, and so the electric utilities have to plan ahead for those kinds of things. So this is really a bill that's just to get everybody on the same page about how to plan for that. It is, it's exciting. It's exciting that the auto manufacturers are moving in this direction. Washington State has some of the cleanest electricity in the country, and it gets cleaner every year, and we're committed to continuing that progress. And so it's a great scalable solution to the climate crisis. It's a great way to improve local air quality and a great way to be making investments in communities that, you know, for one reason or another, haven't always gotten a fair share of infrastructure improvements, and so we can make sure that those folks are able to benefit as we make investments too. So I think it's an exciting opportunity, and this is just a good way to sort of coordinate and all get on the same page about how we move in that direction.
So I guess what's the difference between a mandate, as we have come to expect to, you know, get from government, from new laws that lay down a deadline? This, you say that this doesn't, that it's a goal, I guess.
Yeah.
How does that work in accomplishing these objectives in moving people in that direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the state government doesn't actually get to decide what kinds of cars can be sold. We don't get to regulate cars. That's regulated at the federal level. You essentially get, you can either, as a state, we get to choose whether we want the national clean car standard or the California clean car standards. There's just two choices. So we don't actually get to decide what kinds of cars will be allowed from an emissions perspective. And so if auto manufacturers want to continue selling those kinds of vehicles in Washington State in the future, and if the federal government continues, if those national rules continue to allow it, then Washington State isn't sort of stepping in and saying those cars aren't going to be available for purchase. What we're saying is we think most people are going to want them by then. We think the auto manufacturers are already signaling that they're going to shift in that direction. And we think it's a good thing, so we should be supporting and encouraging.
Okay, and that makes sense. I did not realize that, the whole issue of regulation, and the state can say we want all cars in the state to be electric, or new cars that are sold in the state to be electric by 2030, but it can't say this has to happen, and we're laying down this deadline.
Exactly. You know, the number of lawyers that wanted to talk to me about the nuances of this bill make your head spin. But I think we got it right. You know, we're not creating a mandate. We're really just making sure the infrastructure is there so that as this transition is happening, we're ready for it.
So is the infrastructure, is any of that funded by the government, by taxpayer dollars, or are utilities expected to put that in, or private companies? What's the idea there?
It's definitely a mix. I mean, there certainly are companies that are excited about doing this, right? We heard from representatives from the convenience stores and gas stations that said, "Hey, we want to make sure that as we're thinking about where's the charging infrastructure going to go, we've already got cars coming here and stopping, and we want to make sure that we're part of that part of the clean energy future too." There almost certainly needs to be some public investment to get the ball rolling, and especially to make sure that lower income communities, for example, aren't left out, even though we may not have a lot of Tesla owners right now. We know in the future that's where there's going to be more electric vehicles, and especially when those are communities that have been highly polluted in the past. This is an opportunity to start to get things right and make things fair. So there's some public investment. And then, of course, the utilities are going to need to be making those investments. And I think they want to, right? Because what we're really talking about is selling more electricity. And so they just need to know where that demand is going to be so that they can target those investments in the right places.
All right. I know your time is short, so I wanted to touch on a couple of other issues. It's been a pretty busy and kind of a pivotal session, I would think. It seems to me that there have been some initiatives that have come out of this session. One is obviously with the budget now over $50 billion over 2 years, and looking at it does include a capital gains tax. Some call that an income tax. Obviously, the lawmakers that voted in favor of this and the governor has spoken in favor of a capital gains tax, too, don't share that that sentiment about the tax. But what are your thoughts on it?
So I've voted for it. I'm on the Finance Committee, and we just advanced it last Friday. And I guess the first thing I'd say is that it's an important opportunity for us to start to rebalance an unfair and upside-down tax code. Right now, if you're sort of in the bottom 20% of income earners in Washington State, you pay, on average, about 17 or 18% of your income in state and local taxes. But if you're in the top 20%, you pay between 2 and 3% of your income in state and local taxes. That's not fair. It's not right. And so we ought to start to make improvements to turn that upside-down tax code right side up. And so a capital gains tax is an opportunity to start to do that and to make investments in the places that really matter the most. Early childhood education, K-12 schools, and economic recovery in Washington State. And so we did commit the money that would be raised under that tax to those purposes. And the other thing I'd say, folks, I've heard from lots of folks that are worried that this might affect them. And there's about 8,000 to 9,000 people in Washington State that would end up paying capital gains tax. This is a tax on sale of stocks and bonds, mostly. And if you're not selling if you're not making $250,000 a year selling stocks and bonds, this probably doesn't impact you. But what it does give us the chance to do is to make those investments in those things that are going to make economic recovery possible. Those investments in better education system and early childhood education that have been so importantly highlighted over the last year, and the missing pieces that we need to be making those investments. Right. So I was proud to vote yes on it. I know there's folks that would say you should do otherwise, but I think it's the right thing to do because our tax code's upside down and it's broken, and it's time to fix it.
I think most people would agree with that, and I've said many times I think our taxing system in the state needs to be completely overhauled. But then you've got a lot of people that might agree with that idea, but also worry that a new tax is just a new tax, and that it's that government becomes addicted to the new revenue. It won't give it up, and it won't give up its existing revenue. So it's just adding a tax on taxes that already exist, and there's no guarantee that taxes will ever be reduced on, as you say, on the vast majority of Washington earners. And that it's just going to continue to snowball the whole taxing issue, if you get what I mean. And many people are cynical about what government will do, and that this, sure, you can say that this is a move toward a more equitable taxing system, but where is the proof that is really going to happen, or is this just adding on to, as I said, that snowball? But how would you answer that argument?
Well, I've certainly heard that argument before too, but I've got really good news for you, Joe, that we have passed, and I think it has now moved out of both chambers and is on its way to the governor's desk, a working family tax credit. It's a reduction to sales tax credit for the lowest income families in Washington State, people who are paying that 17% of their income in state and local taxes. We're for the first time ever fully funding working family tax credit that will be a rebate that they start to get. I don't think it's going to be this year. The first one will come out next year. But we're effectively lowering the sales tax for low-income families in Washington state. And that's actually more, that costs us more than we're bringing in from the capital gains tax. So on net, it's a reduction. And at the same time, we're able to be making those investments that I talked about that we need so desperately. So I think, you know, I've heard that argument before, but I don't think it's true. We really are finding ways to make those targeted reductions as we rebalance the tax cut.
All right.
Well, more to do, certainly.
Yeah.
Work's not done. There's job security as we keep trying to get other parts of the system right. But I feel really good about where we're landing on those pieces this year.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. I know your time is limited, and hopefully after the session, I could have you on for a whole show, and we could take calls and do the whole thing.
I'd love to do it. I'd love to come back and do that after the session. Can I make one more plug while I'm on?
Sure, go ahead.
Show here, Joe.
Uh-huh.
Just want to let folks know, you may have heard already, but just so everybody's aware, as of last week, everybody in Washington over 18 is eligible to get vaccinated. And there's spots open. I went with my girlfriend over the weekend, just took her to the community clinic doing vaccinations at Bellingham Technical College. The response she was able to get in. I was able to get a spot later this week at my doctor's office. So it's available. Everyone can get it. We're not through. Hopefully we're past the worst of it, but we're not all the way out of COVID-19 yet. So just urge everybody to keep taking precautions. And if you're not vaccinated yet, their spots open. Urge everyone to go do that.
Yeah, I got the Johnson & Johnson a week ago this past Saturday at the BTC clinic, and I haven't keeled over yet. Okay. I'm glad I had an opportunity to get it. So thanks, Alex. Great having you on. Appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah.
All right,
we'll
Alex, you bet. Absolutely. Alex Rammel, 40th District State Representative, a Democrat with us from Olympia. And we got folks on the line. Alex couldn't stick around too long to take calls, but we'll have him back, I promise. And we'll take your calls in just a moment here on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
When you make Spring Creek by Bonaventure your home, you're not only getting the retirement of your dreams, the simplified lifestyle you deserve, and a spacious suite, you become part of our community. At Spring Creek by Bonaventure, new neighbors become best friends. Book a tour at retirementperfected.com or call us at 360-746-2432 and discover what it means to live life on your terms. Come in today and learn how we can save you thousands. Once again, that's retirementperfected.com.
Are you looking for a vehicle that can adapt to all your adventures? At Dewey Griffin Subaru, that's exactly what you'll find when you check out the SUV for all you love, the 2021 Subaru Forester. The Forester doesn't just fit your lifestyle, it maximizes it. With standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and 33 miles per gallon, you'll love the extra spacious interior, and with EyeSight Driver Assist technology and automatic pre-collision braking, Subaru is dedicated to keeping you safe as you tackle life's greatest adventures. Stop in for a solo test drive today and discover what makes the 2021 Subaru Forester the SUV for all you love at Dewey Griffin Subaru. And if your vehicle needs service, check out Dewey's Express Service Center. It's fast, convenient, and best of all, there's no appointment necessary. Stop by for your next oil change or any other minor maintenance, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Dewey Griffin Subaru. Community-minded, community-driven, and the only Subaru-certified tire and service center in the county.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday. Let's go to the phones, and Rich in Ferndale joins us. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Joe. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Yeah, good for a Monday. Doing all right.
It's a beautiful day. It's summer. It's August and April, but hey, we'll take it.
Man,
you don't have a choice anyway.
Yeah, this weekend was amazing. Yeah, so.
Listening to the... well, he's a senator, right, for the 40th district.
Representative, yeah. Representative.
So the metrics he's saying may be true, but even if they are true, there's more numbers you can look at. You can look at total tax paid and percentage of total tax paid and by what group. I would venture a guess that the top 20% of wage earners, what you might call rich in this state, probably pay 70 to 80% of the total tax. If you look at property tax, poor people don't own houses, right? Or not many. And the property tax and the rich people have really expensive properties with huge tax bills. So sales tax is probably the only thing that affects everybody equally because you can only go to the corner store and eat so many potato chips. So that's going to be the same for everybody.
Well, I would
and
say,
even
though,
rich people buy stuff like a new car, they're paying more sales tax right there.
Sure.
That's a big whack of sales tax.
But I so as far as things, property tax, I think, and I don't own any rental properties, believe me, but I would suspect that most who do include the property tax in the rent to
no,
help?
No, they don't, Joe. There's no assessment on rent for property tax. This goes back to a discussion we had a while back where...
But you can set the rent... You can set the rent at whatever you want. You know, I could... And especially in this market, you could rent...
You are correct.
So, I mean, and not many people are going to invest in a rental property that they're going to lose money on, ultimately.
Right, exactly. Just like business must pass all costs along. You go tax big business, it goes down to the consumer. Every tax a business pays and it stays in business, it goes right on to the consumer, which is you and me. So when you have said before where they don't have to choose to pass it on, they do, or they're out of business. So, but anyway, that's not the point. The point is, it's how you look at the numbers, the metrics you choose to look at. So they're looking at the metrics, percentage of income paid in tax. That's the one that sells the new tax as if it's good. Now, if you looked at total tax paid and by what demographics in this state, you would have a completely differently painted picture. There is no tax on planet Earth that a Democrat would not vote for 365 days a year, ever.
I don't know about that, but
that, nope.
I mean, when you think about it, though, there are a few very, very wealthy people by comparison to the overall population. And they do buy very expensive things and pay tax on those things. But what have you ever heard about our economy, our consumer-driven economy? That's what it is. It relies on huge numbers of people buying not just Mercedes-Benzes or really expensive cars or really expensive homes, but a lot of people buying just everyday stuff. And I mean, you wouldn't have a Fred Meyer if you didn't have people. You wouldn't have Walmart. Look, what made Walmart? It wasn't millionaires and billionaires. It was the average working American who needed stuff, you know?
Your argument makes sense perfectly for sales tax, but if you put in property tax into it, it doesn't. That guy was talking about, he said state and local taxes. I don't think he had property tax built into that. Property tax is probably the number three revenue source in Washington State. Fuel tax and sales tax are number one, I'm sure. And then comes property tax. And if you own a home, which you probably do, right, Joe, you know what it costs. It's expensive to pay property tax.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Huge money. And you think of all the homes in Bellingham, all the homes in the state, how much does that equal in a year? How many billions or hundreds of millions is property tax? And it's not poor people that pay that.
Well, I would suspect that they do by paying rent to the people who hold the mortgage who own the property, who are
not
paying
their
taxes.
They're not directly charging them property tax, just like businesses don't directly pass on a tax increase, per your arguments from before, to the customer. But it is true.
What I've argued before, and I'm running a little, but with an income tax on a business, I mean, that comes after the business has made its profit, and then so that tax would be on the profit, not on its operations that would affect the
then
price.
Next year they charge more to make up the difference because they're not going to go under.
All right. Well, I appreciate your thoughts as always, Rich. Thanks for calling. And and that's what I think we need to iron out is if we're going to cut taxes here, where can we make up that revenue? So we'll be back in just a moment here on KGMI Connects.
Hi, this is Marcia Neal from Vibrant USA, here to let you know about some exciting changes that may impact your monthly individual and COBRA healthcare cost. The recently approved American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 may be able to save you money, but you must act soon. For information, let one of our knowledgeable agents review how these changes might impact you. contact us at vibrantusa.com or give us a call at 866-733-5111.
Now deliberating the fate of Derek Chauvin, charged in George Floyd's death. Defense attorney Eric Nelson told jurors to consider that putting Floyd on his stomach did not contribute to his death.
People sleep in the prone position. People suntan in the prone position. People get massages in the prone position. The prone position in and of itself is not an inherently dangerous act.
Prosecutor Jerry Blackwell knocked down the defense's claim that Chauvin should be considered not guilty if health factors killed Floyd.
We're only required to show you that Mr. Chauvin's conduct was a substantial cause, a substantial factor in Mr. Floyd's death.
CBS News legal analyst Ricky Kleeman on Blackwell's rebuttal.
What he does is he comes forth with this humanity. It's just the person that he is. He's 100% authentic, and it makes him trustworthy and credible as he delivers his closing.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Hi, this is Joe from KGMI. As things open up and the future feels brighter, we know there's still a lot left to do to help our community recover, especially our local eateries. That's why we're declaring that April Foods Day is back on Thursday, April 29th.
You can help local restaurants kickstart their recovery, at the same time recognizing frontline workers that have been working tirelessly throughout the pandemic and helping those in need.
Last year, through your incredible generosity, our community raised over $20,000.
And this year, we're doing it again.
Now, through April 29th, donate to our GoFundMe campaign, where 100% of your donation will go to purchase and redistribute gift cards from our local restaurants.
The goal is to have 1,000 people give $20 each. Your donation is a way to salute those who kept us going these past months and let local business owners and frontline workers know how much we care.
Donate now at KGMI.com and help kickstart the recovery. April 29th is April Foods Day with Cascade Radio Group, Walton Beverage, Cascade Natural Gas, and North Coast Credit Union.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Thanks for joining us here on KGMI Connects, and we do want to hear from you, whatever is on your mind. It's always an open line program, open idea, open opinion. And we started the show with a short interview with Alex Rammel. He's a Democrat representing the 40th District in our state house. We talked about the bill passed by the state legislature that on the face of it would require or mandate electric vehicles only be sold as of 2030 here in the state. But as he explained, it's not exactly a mandate. As the state does not have the authority to regulate the kind of vehicles that can be sold. But it's a goal. And the aim is to get the infrastructure in advance of that, which they hope would take hold, the market that will be expanding for electric vehicles. Let's go to the phones, and 360-676-5464, our number. Jim in Bellingham, welcome to the program.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
Well, I'm just going over the economics of what you're talking about previously. I think we should simplify our definition of the political economy as the size of the pie, meaning how much is produced and what your share of it is. And so if people made more in wages, they would definitely pay more in taxes. Doesn't that make sense? But we've been eroded from the left-wing point of view for the last 50 years or so, ever since Reagan took office. That's 40 years. And the right wing has been cramming this free market stuff down our throat, and lower taxes somehow leads to everyone's prosperity. It's never worked. Just like Michael Parenti, a great man, he said that most of the world is capitalist and most of the world is poor. And I wrote on the internet many years ago that, take a McDonald's for an example, when you tell them that they're going to pay their workers more, say $15 an hour, they say, we can't do that. It'll cause inflation. And why does it cause inflation? There's nothing compelling the McDonald's store owner to raise his prices. What he needs to do is pay them more and take less of what he has been gaining all that time in return, if you follow what I mean. And then, but it never is. The reason it causes inflation is he's not accepting his share of the pie being any less when he's been taking a greater share for all that time to get to the point where people are really struggling now with the money they're making to pay rent and everything. So I think I meant, let you know, I don't believe in capitalism, but how you work around it or find something new is still a challenging question. So
yeah,
but I think we can work in many ways within the system to try and make it better.
And there are, I think there are businesses, there are business people who have adopted that model of not, I guess, of taking less in profit in order to better compensate their workforce and make them happier. There was the one businessman who it's been, 8 years or more, he was down in Seattle, I believe, and had an investment company and decided all of a sudden, boom, one day, as of one day, all his employees were going to make at least $70,000 a year or greater. And there were a few bumps, but I saw an article just recently, and I forget, his name escapes me, but apparently his company's been going strong, and it's continued to be profitable. It was has a company, if I recall correctly, they processed credit card transactions, and that type of a company that would work behind the scenes with other businesses, but he found it to be a successful model. A Costco comes to mind, as I understand it, that they pay, they've been committed to paying higher wages and benefits to their employees, and they have a loyal and loyal workforce and a loyal customer base and profitable business. So it seems that even companies like Walmart are starting to see this with the push for higher minimum wages. They're not pushing back. And so it's kind of a slow turnover, but I think there are those companies that are out there, and there seems to be more of that mindset that, hey, maybe it is better for us all in the long run if we adopt more of that model.
Yes. One final thought, I guess there are people who work on other forms of work doing things, but I do think that I could point this out, that the three richest people in the country own more than the bottom 50%. And that is a staggering inequality. And then you factor into that, what are the jobs that get the most money? We can't tell our grape pickers or our fruit pickers, that are making, $7 an hour if they're lucky. And they provide a necessary, they're essential workers. And yet, for the way the system is struck up, it's kind of every businessman for himself. And there's no way to reward work like that because the money is probably a low margin type of company, grocery. It makes a lot of money, but they have to sell so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to see a system that was flexible and you could actually direct money to those hardworking people, even though the revenue that comes in doesn't get to them. And also the CEOs of those agribusiness probably are part of the upper ruling class, the upper class that makes a lot of money. So I'm very thankful you let me have my say on the air today. So I'll sign
thanks.
Out.
Thanks, Jim. Great to hear from you. We'll take a quick break. We want to hear from you, whatever is on your mind. 360-676-5464. It's KGMI Connects.
The guys at AirTech Heating know you've been spending more time in your home, a lot more time, and that does not look like it's going to be changing anytime soon. So, why not install an air conditioner and update your indoor air quality this spring before the hot weather hits? Call AirTech and have your new air conditioner, heat pump, or ductless system installed today. For more information, call AirTech Heating at 734-5010 and online at airtechheat.net. And stay comfortable year-round.
You outside, enjoying the sun. You wanted a low-maintenance deck and chose Fiberon. With its exceptional resistance to stain, fade, and moisture, you are smart. And for help, you went to Builders Alliance, where you are listened to and expertly guided. Sometimes it just all works. This month, enter to win a Traeger Pro 780 Pellet Grill on the corner of Hannigan and Division in Bellingham. Builders Alliance.
Hi, this is Marcia Neal from Vibrant USA, here to let you know about some exciting changes that may impact your monthly individual and COBRA healthcare cost. The recently approved American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 may be able to save you money, but you must act soon. For information, let one of our knowledgeable agents review how these changes might impact you. Contact us at vibrantusa.com or give us a call at 866-733-5111.
Staying connected with your community each Saturday at noon with KGMI's Community Connection as local business leaders share their expert advice. Sponsored by Lighthouse Mission Ministries, Dewey Griffin Subaru, Feller Heating and Air Conditioning, Columbia Fire, and Vibrant USA. Community Connection, Saturdays at noon on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com. Next time on the KGMI Morning News with Mike Davis.
Tuesday, our weekly legislative updates with Democratic Representative Sharon Shoemake at 7:50 and Republican Senator Doug Erickson at 8:20. And free chow from Rustlers on Front Street in Linden and the Rusty Wagon on the Hannigan as we play Name That Meat at 7:20.
The KGMI Morning News, each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Every day, KGMI brings you the latest news and information. And we also give you a chance to express your opinion on a major news story of the day.
Go to KGMI.com anytime and take part in our daily news poll to see what others are thinking and add your voice.
We'll have an update during the KGMI afternoon news, and Mike Davis will give you a final tally and a new question each day during the KGMI morning news.
Be a part of the conversation with the KGMI Daily News Poll, another informative and free feature from KGMI.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Thanks for joining us here on this sunny Monday. You got some sun and had some fun over the weekend. Get out and worked around the house. Instead of inside the house, worked around the house this weekend. But yeah, what a nice change weather-wise. And looks like our forecast is saying we'll continue to enjoy the weather well into this week. But the state legislature's passed this bill that would, you got to think that the governor will sign it. It's aimed at nudging, I guess, more than anything, the state toward electric vehicles, rather than gasoline or diesel-fueled vehicles. By 2030, the goal is that just electric vehicles would be sold here in Washington State as of 2030. It would be earlier than California and Massachusetts. They've passed the similar laws that would take effect by 2035. Ban would apply to publicly owned and privately owned passenger and light-duty vehicles of model year 2030 or later that are sold, purchased, or registered in Washington State. It passed by a vote of 25-23 in the Senate, 54-43 in the House. It is contingent on the state adopting a tax on vehicle miles traveled to help fund new infrastructure. So that's something that's going to be coming, and there's been pushback against this miles traveled tax, and but it's inevitable. You've got to think, because if vehicles aren't burning gasoline and we've relied on the gas tax to pay for roads and bridges and all that infrastructure for generations now, that has to be replaced, because that infrastructure will still be needed. So this is, as I said, contingent on a tax on vehicle miles traveled being adopted by the state. Bald vehicles legislation, then I'm reading from a Cairo 7 story. Legislation coincides with accelerated efforts by the auto industry to move away from gas-fueled vehicles. GM plans to only sell zero emissions vehicles by 2035. Ford says it will only sell electric vehicles in Europe by 2030. So the industry is moving in this direction. Obviously, it's not giving up on gas or diesel powered vehicles. But I think it ultimately it makes sense. And I would enjoy having an electric vehicle. I think it would be, and not just the feel good part of it that, hey, I'm driving around, I don't have a tailpipe, I'm not creating pollution right here, and naively thinking that I'm not creating any pollution whatsoever by driving an electric vehicle, because obviously the generation of electricity is going to create some emissions to a degree. And the production of the vehicle itself will add to emissions and into the worldwide carbon output and all that. But it'd be much reduced. So, all things to take into consideration. And I'll have an interview. Actually, I did an interview earlier today with Derek Wing from Pemco Insurance. They've looked at the cost of an electric vehicle operating it, the average, and he said their calculation shows the average to operate an electric vehicle around $400 a year, as opposed to about $1,200 for a conventionally fueled vehicle. But what do you have? What's on your mind? Let's go to the phones. Welcome Tim and Everson to the program. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi, Joe. I noticed at the top of the hour there was a CBS News report, which kind of surprised me. But I hope John from Ferndale was listening, because he first reported Officer Sicknick died from being beat to death with a fire extinguisher, backed off that, and then said it was chemical irritation. And at the top of the hour, your news report said that he had two strokes a couple days after the whole event and died of natural causes.
Okay. I don't know that we'll hold anybody's feet to the fire to apologize for anything they say on this program.
I don't expect it. I do not expect it from John.
If we start with John, we're going to have to go down the whole list of people. Who have made claims on this show that many would consider to be dubious at best. But what are some of your other thoughts?
Some of my other thoughts are, there was a guy who was an anti-capitalist who called in shortly before.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, I owned a restaurant, and I never worked so hard and made so little. And it was a successful restaurant. So people can, I'm already going to hear that right now. Well, you weren't doing things right, whatever. I mean, I was there 80 to 100 hours a week. So you got to take that into consideration. Employed 50 people, paid payroll taxes on them, paid all the sales tax on all the food. Some months, that'd be a good month, $20,000. You figure out what that is.
Okay.
Had to deal with employees, which I had a lot of good ones in my time. But that stole from you, that really made life hard.
Okay.
I don't think this anti-capitalist thing is holding water.
Okay. I don't think you're alone there.
I just don't. I mean, you have to, I had several people come to me after. That's why I think food trucks are becoming so popular.
Yeah.
It's because it's a one or two man show.
That's true. You don't have that overhead. You don't have to. It's you and maybe another family member or a very close friend or investor, someone who's right part of your world that has an interest in it being successful. Yeah.
And then again, I think that's probably a Republican view, because there's less taxes you're going to pay on city permits, payroll taxes.
Now, Democrats don't all love taxes, but I know that's not a very popular thought. But, well, thanks for your thoughts, Tim. I appreciate it. I've got a bunch of folks on the line. I want to get to them quick before we run out of time. Let's go to Russ. Is this Russ in Bellingham?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Russ. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call, Joe.
You bet.
Yeah, big deal on the electric vehicle miles traveled is, if you have an electric vehicle and you travel out of state,
yeah,
And then are you going to have to pay for all the miles traveled? Or if somebody, you know, from a different state travels into Washington with an electric vehicle, they're not paying any tax.
Well, that's a good point. And how do you even all that out? That's, you know, and I don't even know that they've come up with a plan. And maybe that's why they haven't implemented this tax yet, is because they don't know how to make that. How do you even keep track of someone's mileage? And I don't know, do you, because then you get into even privacy issues. Are they, you know, if they're tracking the number of miles you drive, or, you know, they have some kind of a odometer attached to your vehicle that they're keeping track of. So I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
Yeah.
On propane powered cars, they did a flat license. When you bought your license, you had to pay an extra. So, got into the same kind of an issue, but, it was on your license fee, not on your miles traveled.
Yeah. But like you say, it'd be nice if people who are driving on our roads, if they're registering their vehicles in another state, if they contribute, because somebody comes here, you know, drives from Portland to Seattle, they're probably going to buy gas here.
But,
Good point.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
You
Bye-bye.
Bet. Thanks, Russ. Great to talk with you. Let's go to Brandon in Everson. Hi, Brandon.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. Thanks. You had thoughts
Good.
On? Go ahead.
Yeah. My biggest concern is about electric vehicles and registering it by 2030 is, you know, like looking out for the people that, you know, can't really afford a whole lot. So like apartments and things like that. You know, as you have, you know, 100 cars or more, where do you start charging all of these? You know, like the rich and people that can afford these kind of things, you know, park in your garage, you plug it in, you're good to go, no big deal. But when you start talking about, you know, low housing income and stuff like that, now we're in a whole different realm. And, you know, having this milestone for 2030 really plays a convoluted, the horse before the cart kind of thing. And we're not quite there. We're not set up for it yet. I mean, our whole power infrastructure is not there. And so, you know, just going to this is going to be a huge ordeal.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up a good point with, like, apartment buildings, and you see, like, they have those big, long carports and, you know, stall after stall after stall for each apartment, and then... What are they going to have, a 220 outlet at every one of those stalls? And, yeah, so it does open up a huge can of worms in that respect. You're right.
Yeah, especially if it's registered. If you have the registered vehicle by 2030, it's not necessarily like, you know, do all gasoline vehicles have to, you know, stop registering? And I know it's for light vehicles and not just for, heavy trucks and stuff like that. It's just for light vehicles, but it still makes a huge difference. I mean, most of our vehicles are light, you know, for travel. So.
Yeah. Well, another good point. Absolutely. Thanks for your thoughts, Brandon. And hopefully they would take this into consideration. Hopefully people are working on this issue because, yeah, that's a huge one. How would a large and more of, if you look what they're building here in Bellingham especially, it's big apartment buildings and big apartment complexes. And along with those are going to become individual vehicles. And if they're, you know, even half of them are electric. That's a big investment that's going to have to be made by, of course, the apartment owner, but also then how do you get all that power to that place? It seems like a huge, huge thing. But thanks for your thoughts, Brandon. Let's go to Randy in Bellingham. Hi, Randy.
Oh, hi, Joe. I just wanted to comment on the deal about renters not being aware of how much property tax is. I got a solution for that. What they need to do is make a state law where the property tax is listed on the rent receipt and also when apartments are advertised as a separate item. Otherwise, apartment $400 or $800 a month, property tax $100. It would be listed just like now if you are buying a condo, they list the condo maintenance fee. The monthly fee for the condo maintenance is always listed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're renting an apartment or a storage unit or a room or whatever it is, the property tax part of the rent is separate, so that the renter knows how much they're paying in property tax. Mm-hmm. And that way, it would have a kind of a twofold effect. The renters would stop, because they're aware that they're actually paying a property tax and how much it is. Because you would just take the, say if you had an apartment house of 20 apartments in it, you would take your property tax for that, divide it by 20, charge each renter that much. Uh-huh. And so then the renters would, I think it would change their voting. They'd stop voting for things like no-income housing, bicycle lanes, frivolous things, because the way it is now, a lot, at a college town like this, or a lot of the renters are college students, I think we end up with a lot of this stuff because they're just not aware that it costs money.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people that might disagree with you that a rent, you know, affordable housing fund is frivolous, or and obviously we're talking about schools and other services and that are provided, I think, that are pretty critical. I mean, here the EMS, you know, we just had the EMS levy, you know, that's tied to our property tax, and
a lot of those things are. I guess my point is that they would be aware of how much they're paying for this. There's a lot of stuff that comes up, just like this most, of course I brought up the no income housing, but then there's a lot of other things too, you know, mm-hmm. that gets voted through in these special levies and so on and so forth, you know, that ends up on our property taxes. And the property taxes are outrageous. It's like paying rent for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my suggestion for that solution is to make it a separate thing, just like sales tax. When you get your receipt, the sales tax is listed separately.
Yeah.
So that you know that's not part of the landowner's profit. You know, otherwise, if you're paying $1,000 a month for an apartment, and 800, maybe only 700 of that goes to the landlord. See, you're not really paying that much in rent. You're paying a lot of it in property tax, which
yeah.
is true.
Well, you know, and that's true. And then we'd have a bunch of college kids deciding how we fund our EMS service, and if we have affordable housing and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, it's a thought, and we'll see where that might go, and we'll see where it goes with the electric vehicle thing as well. We're on this experiment, it sure seems. Thanks for joining us today. A lot of great calls, as always, and we'll, of course, be back with the full program and expect your participation tomorrow here on KGMI Connects. Hope you stay tuned. The KGMI Afternoon News is next.